Welcome, everybody. My name is Sabrina. I am a staff member here with the Beloit International Film Festival. I wanted to thank everybody for joining us. Our moderator, Lindsay Mitchell, will be taking over from me in a second. We have three great films that we are going to be having conversations and questions with. If you have any questions during this show, during the session, you can use the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen, enter your question in that way. You can also use the chat box and send your question in, or you can use the raise hand function, raise your hand, and at an appropriate time, I will give you the allow to talk option and you can ask your question to any of our filmmakers directly. If you're watching this on Facebook Live, you can enter your question into the chat field. I wanna take a moment and thank our sponsor, Culver's, for supporting the Keys Q&As and sponsoring them. Always great food and a great sponsor for us the last few years. And that is it. With that, I will give you over to Lindsay.
Okay. So this is an awesome collection for me because it's three completely different types of films. Christina, you've got a straightforward informational documentary. It's amazingly well done. It touched me personally. It was really great. Benjamin, you have a narrative film with sort of an interesting idea and a kind of a twist to it. And I enjoyed that a whole lot. And then Daniel, you've got a film that, because I didn't read the director's notes before I watched it, I thought was a documentary until I found out it wasn't. And then I had to watch it again. And I still don't really understand that it's not a documentary. It hit a really fascinating kind of truth. Like, there's no moment where you're like, oh, acting, that's acting. I see it. It acts like a documentary, and I love that. Christina, why don't we start with you and talk about how you you started this? You kind of switched your life around to make it happen. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I had like a moment in time that changed my life. I was at a party in Hollywood in 2012, and it was Christmas time, and I was teaching acting, and one of my students invited me there, and I met an anti-trafficker, and she was a nurse working in Northern California. Children and women were coming in who had been trafficked. She told me some horror stories about what she had decided to do is start an NGO that would build homes for rescued children and women, rehabilitate them. Because when she was working as a nurse in a hospital with all these victims, there were people, children and women coming in who there was no system or kind of, way to rehabilitate them. There was no grid for that. So because the level of trauma is so high. So she wanted to start homes and staff them. And I wanted to raise money for her. It was like one of those moments that change your life where you realize you kind of have a destiny with the subject matter. And I didn't think of it like I was going to direct anything. At that time I was teaching acting. I directed little stuff. And I tried to get other people to direct something, like some kind of promotional piece for it, and they wanted money. So she said to me, Christina, all the money we raise has to go to the children. I said, of course. I sold some property, cut to a few years later, and I was just meditating, praying about, I wanted to self-produce something. I had another project I was going to do, and then I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And that's how it started for me. It was a very intense journey and not something I planned out at all. And here I am.
Yeah, that's excellent. That seems like it would have been like just very emotionally intense. It was hard to watch, you know, and I wasn't there and I don't have any personal experience of it, but you talk to a lot of people who'd had really difficult lives and kind of had to do something with that, you know?
Yeah. Well, you get to a point where you really, they all start looking like superheroes to you in a way, because now I'm not diminishing the levels of trauma we all experience here in America, but in certain pockets of the world, or even certain states in this country, there are hotspots where at-risk people are. And there are like gradations, you know? I mean, and to overcome those kinds of levels of trauma and betrayal and abuse, and it's inspiring. It makes you realize what the human spirit's capable of, you know? That's how I ended up feeling about it. But it's painful to confront it. But the thing that I realized making the movie, the journey I had personally, is that if we can't gird our loins to confront the deeper issues, they don't get solved. We can't, you know, that's grown-up time. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm in my 50s. When are we as people going to not be so fragile that we can't try to take on these bigger, harder issues and grow as humans, you know? There you go.
Benjamin, you're just the one that didn't have a trailer. Do you want to talk a little bit about the story that you put together and talk about how you came to make that film?
Sure. Yeah. My film it's called A Good Person, and it's a short narrative piece, thrillery, horror-y a little. It's basically follows this guy on his way home, and he accidentally hits a person, and instead of trying to fess up and stand up for his actions, he just kind of buries it from everyone that he loves pretty much. And yeah, there's a twist at the end too, where not really a twist, but he kind of just fully embraces his path of lying to people. And yeah, it's a little dark.
It was a bit, but you know, it definitely led to a lot of like internal discussion for me. You know, if I was this guy, like you could see his struggle, you know, he kind of almost called 911. He was like, maybe, you know, and there was like a lot of back and forth internally with him. Like, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And so it led to a lot of things for me, you know, like, what would I do? You know, you want to be like, ew, I would never, but maybe not, you know, it's life changing regardless.
Yeah.
Daniel, why don't you talk about making Teddy out of tune and how that happened?
Sure. Yeah. You talked about, you know, it's sort of it's a hybrid film. We shot it in a documentary form, but there's plenty of acting. The Teddy title character is played by my main collaborator, Drew Connick, who's a really talented actor and writer and improviser. And we sort of developed this character together, this, you know, nomadic street musician that plays piano and has a piano in the back of his truck. And then we just drove from the border of Mexico, Southern Arizona, to the border of Canada and Washington, and then spread his fictional mother's ashes. But then along the way, we hung out with, you know, people that were real, people that we knew or strangers. So it had this very organic sort of, you know, road trip, confessional, you know, sort of road movie that unfolded. Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed to. Did the people that you met on the way, did they know that Teddy wasn't Teddy, or did they think it was Daniel traveling with Teddy? What did they know about what they were doing?
Yeah, I mean, they knew Teddy was Drew, but you know, all the lines were very blurred just because it was like 100 degrees outside, and you know, I was the only person on crew. So when we did roll up into situations, it was just, you know, two random guys, one with the piano, one with the camera, and then just kind of hang out with people and just tell them we're making a movie. And I don't know if they really met Drew Connick, but we did tell him that he was, you know, Drew playing Teddy and stuff, just because we were so sort of immersed in the experience. And, you know, we had this piano and this truck, and we're kind of attracted the same energy that we were putting out. And some of them were friends that we had plans to meet up with along the road, but other people were, you know, spur of the moment interactions that obviously led to, I mean, there's plenty of scenes that I would just say are documentary scenes that are more real than fake. And then there's other scenes that are more, you know, concocted and stuff. But yeah, we just wanted to make a movie that felt super real. Yeah.
It definitely did. It definitely did. I'm going to take that moment to keep talking to you, and then we'll go around again. How did you find someone to play Ted? Is Drew like this person in real life? Or like, he was very... I have a hard time picturing him being some other way. So like, how did you find this guy to play this part?
Yeah, Drew and I worked together as production assistants, where we just drove trucks and did manual labor for a film festival. And, you know, you just kind of shoot the shit when you do a job like that with someone and like kind of kick the can. And I just realized he was really funny, expressive person. And then later I realized he's a trained actor. Like, he just kind of didn't tell me that, but Yeah, I mean, he's just like a really talented, fun guy. And I knew that we had a rapport and that if we just, you know, took a camera on the road and just had fun together and talked about our feelings, that it would be sort of interesting. You know, I'd have something to edit together at the end. But yeah, Drew's one of my main collaborators, and we built the character around, you know, problems that are from our past or things that we still deal with, or, you know, people in our families or people in our lives that we're inspired by. And just kind of, you know, there's a line in the movie where he does some Shakespeare with his friend Aaron, our friend Aaron, and they talk about, you know, making characters out of your problem self, you know, as theater for therapy. So I think that's kind of what we were doing, you know.
I can see that. It played like that. That's a great way to do it. Benjamin, how did you cast the characters in your film? Were they people you knew, or how did you do that?
Well, funnily enough, this was my senior thesis project at UWM, and I had a completely different plan for a film that I had planned for a very long time. And as a lot of student productions go, it fell apart due to a location issue that I couldn't solve. And so I was scrambling to try and figure out other ideas. I'd kind of written this script before, and then I decided I was going to go with this. So I refined it, and I like was, you know, talking with my fellow students in my senior course. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to have to act in this and be my lead character, cause I don't really have a plan or any money to like spend on an actor right now after dumping it all on that other project. And then someone in my course, Joe, who is my lead, he was like, I mean, I'd be interested in doing something like this. This sounds like, I mean, and Joe and I are friends. So it was nice to work with him, and he was game for everything and just a very helpful dude. And the mother character in it was going to be my lead on my other film, and I re-recruited her. And then Anthony, Joe, the lead's character, his girlfriend, is actually his real wife in real life. And yeah, so a simple kind of gathering from people I knew sort of process, mostly.
You have a talented group of people that you know, then. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Christina, how did you decide? You ran across so many people in the course of filmmaking. How did you decide what stories to concentrate on? How did you pick and choose out of that who was going to like show up? There were several who showed up a lot of times, you know, who kind of had an ongoing story. How did that work for you?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you, Daniel, because I totally believed in your trailer that was a doc. I was like, oh. So congratulations. I'm like impressed now very much with you. So I think, you know, we came home with 600 hours of footage. I went on one trip, 2015, met a bunch of anti-traffickers, and that was like all synchronistic events that kind of came together. Southeast Asia seemed to be the area where all the connections opened up for me with it. That was not consciously planned. It just opened up that way. And we fought between 2015 and 16 to get different anti-trafficking groups involved, but they tend to specialize, some of them. Like one does undercover work, one does legal stuff. So it's really hard for them to hold onto their visa and do their work and not upset the government and the authorities. So it's such a fine line for all of them all the time. So I kind of, that was always a consideration, by the way, with everything we did, what we could show, how we showed it. It's like you're trying to protect them, but also tell the truth. So you have to be really careful because, you know, this wasn't some, you know, all I wanted to do was honor the work and try to help create something that people could learn from the work. So I think when we were assembling it, ultimately after the second trip in 2016, which took about 2.5 years, I spent a lot of time, you know, I would make a decision, oh, this story has to be in it. And then we'd watch the flow and it was like, oh, you know, this is already so intense and dark material. It can't hold this. So the film itself kind of tells you what it can hold and what it can. I know you guys know this. I'm not telling anybody who makes movies that they don't know this. It starts speaking to you like what the audience needs, which is very separate from maybe what the filmmaker wants or even the idea in your head of what you want the film to be. And, you know, that's an ongoing process. So I don't know if that makes sense. Does my answer make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, I think definitely. Do you find, Christian, I see you're in the middle of answering this, so I'm going to let you answer it live. Do you find that there's a recurring theme in your body of work? I think this is maybe the only one you've produced. Is that correct? Or the only one you've directed?
Yeah, this is my first film. You know, I had wanted to start directing younger, and then I started teaching, and then I started directing students, and that's how little stuff started happening to me for New York. And then I moved to LA with a teaching job, and then, you know, self-producing, you have to kind of either have a lot of money or a big idea. I think that, you know, when I teach Chekhov or when I teach other playwrights, it's so interesting because that's the big challenge. And that's what's exciting is figuring out who really is this artist, what runs them, what's underneath them, what issues are they working out? So I could tell you about Chekhov, but with me, you know, I think as everything's filtered through the fact that I'm a woman, everything's filtered through the times that I grew up in and the person I am now, being in the arts and, you know, my faith, but also being liberal. I mean, it's filtered through your lens, right? So I think those issues, I mean, that's in the film. My faith, my politics are kind of filtered through, and the fact that I'm a woman. But I don't know, it would take somebody smarter than me to tell me that. I don't know if I consciously know it totally yet.
Benjamin, what about you? Do you have any kind of recurring themes in the work that you've done or been involved in?
Well, through school, did a lot of searching. You know, I feel like a lot of people do that in school, search for their thing. And I think that I feel similar to Christina, where I feel like there's times where I feel like I have a grasp on what my big artistic vision is. But I feel like I'm interested in so many things that I like to search a lot still. And I think that that's okay. You don't have to totally nail down what your one, you know, type of thing is. And yeah, does that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And there's certainly something to be said for not, like, you know, buttonholing yourself into a, you know, like this is the thing. Clearly that's a Benjamin Hogue film because of the thing. Or whatever it is. So that's really good. Daniel, do you have anything? I guess I don't know what work you might have done before this. I didn't look into that super hard. So do you have any kind of recurring themes?
Yeah, I mean, I like to make movies about lonely artists. I feel like maybe that's a recurring sort of primary subject that I have, and, you know, people that don't have an audience necessarily but still are compelled to express themselves, you know, that's what their body does. And, you know, just sort of like in the healing power of, you know, expressing love and receiving love and sharing it, but also sort of self-sabotage and how people can, you know, push people away or, you know, exhibit certain behaviors from things that would happen to them in life that can kind of get in their way. So it's sort of like lonely artists that really want people to love, but to have a tendency to be alone, and sort of that dichotomy of that. And yeah.
Interesting. I see that there's a note in the chat for Daniel. Tammy says, I enjoyed your film. It was powerful. I didn't realize it wasn't a documentary until the credits at the end. Awesome job. How long was your actual filming road trip journey?
Sure. Yeah. So we filmed the main, you know, voyage of it was about 2 weeks on the road, starting in Los Angeles and then going to Arizona and then back up, you know, through the West Coast, up through Oregon and California again in Washington. So about 2 weeks, end of July, beginning of August, and it was 100 degrees everywhere at all filming locations during the trip. So it was really difficult. And our truck was the production car, Teddy's truck, and it didn't have air conditioning. So it was really tough. But it was cool. And then we did a lot of like a preliminary sort of concept and test shoots before that. You maybe noticed some of the Super 8 that kind of popped in it a little bit, was us sort of location scouting and just having fun beforehand. And then it actually made it into the edit. And then I see a comment asking me if I'm from LA. I'm not. Drew isn't based in LA. So we started sort of down there. I'm in Berkeley, California right now. And then I'm from Oregon, the state of Oregon. So it was cool to be able to kind of cruise through my home state, and definitely like a love letter to, you know, the highways between the major cities and on the West Coast, and just how fun it is to drive around and think about things and drive under the redwoods and stuff. So, yeah.
Excellent. What made you want to become a filmmaker? Christina, I'm going to start with you. I find that amazing. Like, I find that fascinating that this subject moved you so much that you actually became something else to tell the story. But why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I mean, maybe it's the intersection of like who I am and other things that I'm unconscious of, but I don't know. I just think that, I remember back now that when I was young, I directing was kind of something I was doing unconsciously as a child, because I was an actress most of my life and then taught acting and then ended up producing and directing little stuff. And then I remember I'm a cinemaphile. Like, I'm obsessed with classic films. My parents are both actors, so they were always, my dad used to say to me, if you want to be a good actor, watch great performances and watch old movies. And so I was always watching, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of great filmmaking. And I think that maybe that was unconsciously preparing me or something. I don't know, but that's a big part of who I am. So I think when it all started, I had been fed up with the production I was in a bar with a boyfriend at the time. And I was like, gosh, I could direct it. And then I was like, I should go to directing school. Maybe I should go to directing school. But I'm like, that's a lot of money. And how am I going to make that happen? And I'm just starting to teach. And he was like, do it, do it. I'm like, you know, and it just never happened. And then slowly over time, directing things happened, and then had the money. And I didn't consciously, frankly, plan that. It just slowly evolved.
Definitely sounds like a meant to be kind of thing.
I think that might be a better answer to his question, but I do think ultimately what vaulted me to do it was the subject matter. Yeah.
Benjamin, what about you? Have you always wanted to be in filmmaking, or how did this play out for you?
It started, like most filmmakers, starts when you're young and you fall in love with different films and you fall in love with different forms of art. And, you know, for a while I wanted to be a musician as a kid, and then had friends who wanted to do little projects here and there when you're, you know, in high school, and you just do fun little stupid videos and that sort of stuff. Just like falling in love with different movies, and they make you feel a certain way. And as life goes on, different movies mean different things to you, and it never gets old is the good thing. You always have
Yeah, I suppose so. Daniel, how about you? How did you become a filmmaker?
You know, I just really liked watching movies when I was a kid, and I always kind of, you know, felt that would be something cool to do as an adult. But I remember like wanting to make serious movies all the time as a kid, and like not even feeling compelled to do it because I like knew I couldn't because I was just a kid, you know what I mean? Or I like didn't, I would like try to write, you know, stories that were beyond my years maybe when I was a younger kid. But I just like got all sorts of regular jobs after graduating college, and then started, you know, working manual labor production jobs for film festivals, and then just made a lot of music, and then it was sort of cinematic, so I had something to put to my little videos when I was first starting out, and then just use those to, you know, recruit friends and other collaborators and artists. And then it just kind of snowballed, and then, you know, started getting a little bit support in my area, and then just kept making stuff and not really fussing or thinking anything was too precious. It was fun. You know, I just like to finish things and keep making art, and film's awesome because you can do, you know, cinematography, writing, collaboration, music, you know, all in one sort of effort where it all funnels to the same goal. So I really like filmmaking, you know, it's like a big enough endeavor to dedicate your life to. So I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely grateful that you're doing it because some of this stuff is amazing. I see there's a question in the chat from one of the attendees. Christina, Richard wants to know how long have you been presenting your film on the festival circuit and how has it been received? Oh, you're on mute, Christina.
Well, I hate to do this, but I have to thank COVID for this, which is a weird thing to say, but you know, COVID helped a lot of the process because I was kind of introspective. And we had submitted to some festivals before COVID, but predominantly I did a re-edit and I just went, how can we make a 2.0 version? Like I used to say to acting students, I was always like, you know, how can you revisit this and see it in a new way? Like challenge yourself. Cause you know, it's very easy to get stuck. Even as an actress, you're looking at a scene or a character, like it can be challenging. You can't be lazy going back and going back and going back. Like right now I could go back. I think if I had a little time, a vacation, I could go back and re-edit it again, really. But it's been about a year and we've been in, I can't remember the amount I stopped. Like it's probably about 45 and gone into festivals and won like 22 awards and about 12 noms so far, but you know, medium festivals, I would say predominantly. So we're doing pretty good. I mean, I'm hoping for a sale. We just got a sales agent. So that's the goal, is to get it sold. So yeah, I mean, I feel like we've done well. I feel really lucky for who I am, not having gone to film school to be in this position at all. So I'm really grateful for how it's doing so far. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I see there's a question in the chat from somebody anonymously. During the filming process, what's a memorable or a funny moment that you want to share about something behind the scenes? Christina, we can go ahead and start with you.
Memorable. God, there were a lot of them. You know, I think the most moving thing always for me was going in the slums because I think I revisited this in LA because there's such a homeless population. I had like a phobia, a fear of people in that position, not of being attacked, nothing like dark, but just, I don't know what kind of fear came up around it, but every time we would go into the slums, that would happen to me. And the people in the slums in Cambodia and Thailand, even when I was doing this little project in LA with the homeless community, always end up being so beautiful. And I'm not saying a lot, there's a lot of different issues there, sometimes with addiction, sometimes with mental illness, sometimes they're brilliant, like brilliant people, like more impressive than, you know, people who aren't in that situation. So I think that experience always is kind of revelatory and meaningful for me.
Yeah. Benjamin, did you have a funny or a memorable moment from your filming process?
Oh yeah, of course there's a bunch, but I feel like a good one would be the opening sequence is all like a big exterior scene and it being Wisconsin, it was incredibly cold as it always is. We'd planned pretty well for the fact that we had no budget and no time really. There's a like fake blood that was used and my girlfriend was my production designer and it was so cold that the fake blood froze to her gloves and to my gloves and to many people's gloves. Luckily, we had some extra pairs of gloves on set and stayed warm enough, luckily. But don't use that fake blood in the cold because it like freezes, like really freezes.
Good to know. Good to know. My future fake blood winter project. Daniel, do you have any funny or memorable moments that you had during filming?
Yeah, I mean, it was, filming was, you know, there's all sorts of fun and challenging days. And I remember, you know, Drew gave such an intense performance, and a lot of the time it was just me and him. So there's, I remember, like, there's being moved to tears a few times, you know, one time in the desert, once in the forest, and once on the beach. So, like, having all these very spiritual experiences in different landscapes around the country and places I grew up was really special. And, you know, there's a lot of fun parts too, you know, like playing music with Melissa Vardy, who we hung out with, who was a stranger. You know, we played music with her for like an hour plus, and there's all sorts of fun songs that just didn't make it in, and all these really sort of fun natural moments. And yeah, I see a question asking about the home videos, you know, mm-hmm. Teddy from 91. That was Drew's, who obviously looks like him, but he's actually dressed exactly like Teddy in that. But the baby clips are Drew and stuff. And so, yeah, we really, you know, used everything at our disposal. You know, the clip of Drew's mom is his mom and stuff. And yeah, it was, you know, it was a friends and family affair for sure, you know, and just like having some archival stuff and just GoPro, Super 8, you know, old home videos and stuff. So yeah.
Ah, well, and then Benjamin, I had a question for you. That's my own question. So is your main character a good person? Or no, like, no. I don't know. Tell me about this guy.
I feel like it, well, that the movie's asking that throughout, like, at what point do you become a bad person? And what does it mean to be a bad person? But I think it's pretty clear that he is not.
I wanted to know what happened after the film ended. Like, is his fiance ever going to find out? Like, his mother, like, is she going to, you know, I just, like, I needed to know what was going to happen after that. So, you know, when you make a part 2, you should let me know what happened to this guy, who clearly is not a good person, but it set himself up for a huge fall.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. For someone who has not seen your film, Christina, what is one line that you would say to get them to watch it? What would you tell someone who hasn't seen your film about your film to convince them to see it?
Gosh, that's a great question. And it's insanely demanding of me. And I'll try to think in a second really well off the top of my head. Okay. I would say, oh, okay. This is what I would say. This is being bandied around right now, human sex trafficking. And sometimes it's used politically in the wrong way, in a dangerous way. And if you want to be woke, you should really figure out what it is, just like we're all trying to figure out what really stuff is right now, and not just buying science sound bites. Just really get to the bottom, because this can't be politicized in the wrong way. It really can't. It shouldn't be. So I think we should all, and I do think, well, this is impossible in one sense. I can't do it. I'd have to sit in my apartment for like hours trying to figure out. But I can say, I also think that it should and it can strengthen you to make positive changes in your life. That's what it did for me and a lot of my friends who have seen it. Sometimes they don't become anti-traffickers, but they end up making positive changes, breaking, you know, patterning. So I think it's a film that will help you do that for yourself.
Benjamin, how about you? What's one thing that you would say to someone who hadn't seen your film to get them to watch it?
It's a fun watch. It's not too long. I don't know. I spent a lot of my time as a student making it, and I feel proud of it, and that it's a fun watch in only 12 minutes.
Daniel, how about you? What would you say to someone who hadn't seen your film?
I guess if they're curious, I mean, of the intersection of narrative and documentary and want to see an experiment of a road film production that's very intimate and raw, and you know, if they want to get inspired to make films with limited resources. And, you know, our production budget was under $10,000. So we think it's a good, you know, example of just, you know, when you don't have cash or resources, you know, to dig deep and dig into your heart and connect that way. So it's like the, just if you want to get motivated and believe in yourself, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Christina, I see there was one comment in the chat that I just wanted the Facebook viewers to know. Someone had said, thanks for making this film. The scene with the tree and the statement about holding the babies by the feet and bashing their heads against it was very emotional. And I had actually forgotten about that scene because your documentary was full of like really terrible emotional hits, you know? But yeah, I think it touched a lot of people. It seems to be the case over here in the chat. So.
Well, thank you. And I know that the movie is, I know it's hard. I know it's not the subject matter. Like I was even talking one day with my editor, because he kept trying to smooth it out, lighten it up. And I was like, I think if we did that, then it would seem disrespectful to the subject matter. So it's such tricky material to kind of illuminate and educate while you're also trying not to hurt the audience, because I didn't want to do that. I think that scene, you know, this is hard to admit, but every time we would get to that line, I thought about getting rid of that tidbit from the Khmer Rouge. I would like for a while, I would laugh during it, like totally inappropriately, because I was like, oh my God, like this is so horrendous. But I think I really wanted to keep it ultimately because the trauma of that, of those events are like imprinted on these people and they do not have the grid to heal from it. They just don't. And we keep thinking, oh, time has passed. Why haven't they gotten over it? They haven't gotten over it because they're not doing the work they need to do just to evolve past it. And I think we have to get engaged in that work more with people and not have unrealistic demands of them. So there you go about that moment. That moment, yeah.
This was something I wondered about personally, kind of based on that. Did you, during the filming of this, did you see some of these women you were working with slip back into habitual patterns or lifestyles or get pulled back in somehow by people they knew or anything like that? Or does that not happen as much as you'd expect?
No, well, the first girl that we had in the first segment with an NGO that we made anonymous, I got friendly with her. I mean, I got very emotional with that because she went back into the life, you know, her parents, there's a backstory there that we actually wanted to include, but it overwhelmed the audience. So we couldn't do it because I was like, I'm Mrs. Give them all the information because they got to get educated. But when we got into that, even though I wanted it, cause I thought it would affect them, it was too much for the top of the film. So, she basically, her mother wouldn't let her stop working there. She needed her to be, she was like the breadwinner. And that's another problem in these countries. There's a really good doc, by the way, called Notorno that I think just won Gotham. It's about trafficking. They touch on trafficking in the Mideast. It's all about that region and what's happened with this unrest and all the wars that have happened in the last, because the Mideast is now what used to be, you know, Southeast Asia in the 50s, 60s, 70s. So, but that's another beautiful movie that touches on that. I'm glad they do, because they do a great job. Did that answer the question? Or did I?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, there's just so much damage inflicted, you know, that really doesn't, you can do some things with it, but you're really never going to be the person you would have been if you hadn't been in this situation. And I wasn't sure how that, it seems like in some ways, some of that would have to just carry through your entire life and you're just always going to have it. And either you can work with that or you can't. And
but, you know, difficult. I did a panel at another film festival with a woman who survived. And the level of like wisdom and knowledge, the work she was doing with young people who had been in it was profound. Like, you know how in AA, it's a bunch of ex-addicts healing each other, right? So there is a purpose, a powerful purpose for the experience that they've had, you know? And I feel the same about, you know, trapped people who have been trafficked. they, when they go back, they're like, no one's going to be able to speak to their wounds like anyone, you know, who's better going to know what they need to get out. So the ones who do get out are sheroes. They're like heroes, you know, and the dudes that do it, that's another thing. The dudes that are in these anti-trafficking things are like, because as a woman, to see a man do that, fighting for children and women, is kind of incredibly powerful and moving and inspirational, you know?
You do get used to seeing a female face attached to the protagonist side of this story. And so, yeah, seeing a man's face is a little bit of a shakeup, I guess. I'm hoping for the day when that will not be the case. When it will just be like, look at all these heroes, and not be like, whoa, that was a guy. That's weird.
Yeah, like women, it's interesting. The first guy, I wish I could have shown his face, but I was like a little kid with him. Like, I was so impressed with what he's done with his life, like day in, day out, doing this rescue work, moved his family to Cambodia to do it. Like, he was like a dad figure immediately when I met him. I was just so impressed and kind of awed by him because this is what he was doing, you know?
Yeah, I see Sabrina has popped back in. Hi, Sabrina.
I did. I just wanted to, we had a question come through on Facebook, and the person wasn't very clear on which film it was directed to. But I'm going to guess it's either to Daniel or Christina. One of you dedicated your film to a David? Was that yes or no? Then neither one in that question doesn't apply here. So maybe there are. Daniel, did you?
I dedicated the film to my friend Brandon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then maybe I think they were confused.
I dedicated the movie to my father, Lewis. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for those. But I don't see any other questions have come through. Or Lindsay, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask our filmmakers today?
I feel like I could talk to these guys for a really long time about their films, but no, I don't have anything that was pressing. I'm just enjoying this so much.
Daniel, Benjamin, Christina, do you guys have any questions for each other before we head off? No? Okay. Well, I thank everybody for joining us today, everyone who's joined us here on Zoom and everyone who's joined us on Facebook. You know, again, we're only day 3 in the festivals. There's still 7 days more left. So head on over to our streaming platform. Immerse yourself into films, watch these 3 great films as well as many others. Again, I want to thank our sponsor for these Q&As, Culver's. And that is it. As we say, kind of go Biff or go home, but everyone's at home, so just stay home and Biff. So thank you, everybody, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.